Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Ayin Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Tes. In the margin, you'll notice a nosei, a topic heading, which reads as follows: Kitsho Aviha, a man marries off his daughter. The Torah provides the right of a father to marry off his daughter if she is a ketana, if she's a minor, or even if she is a na'ara between ages 12 and 12 and a half. Uba oiso yoim kitsho es atzma. And the same day, she, the girl, married off herself. In other words, she accepted money on her own from some man. Shelmi toifes, whose kiddushin takes hold, the one that the father did with the man that he had met, or the girl with the man that she had met. Machlokes Rav Shmuel. We'll see this is a disagreement in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel. We will notice triangles that appear shortly after we begin our shiur. These are shlovim levarer alma medubar, stages in order to clarify what are we speaking about, what are the circumstances. HaGemara Tasik. The Gemara will conclude. Of course, we'll have to have a little patience till we get there, but the Gemara will conclude Shemedubar Biyoim Achron Shel Shishil Chodshei Na'arus, that we're talking about a very specific day, the last day of the 6-month Na'arus period. Ubesoif Hayoim Nimseis Boigeres, and at the end of that day, we see she has the physiological signs indicating bogeres, that she's reached adulthood and hence legal independence. The Rav and Shmuel chokim ha'im oimrim, and Rav and Shmuel will be disagreeing. Do we go kirav the mikavon de achshav he bogeres gam lemafreya betchilas hayom hoise bogeres? Do we say that since we find her now to be a bogeres at the end of the day, that at the beginning of the day, of that last day of the 6 months, she also had achieved her bogeres state, the rak kiddushel kiddushin, and if that be the case, then only her marriage would be in effect. The father would no longer have had any control over her. Oy kishmuel, the Chayshinon leKiddushei Shneim, or do we go like Shmuel, and that takes into consideration both the father's marriage and the daughter's marriage? The Gemara, Itmar, Kitsho Aviha Baderech, the Kitsho Atzmo Beir. Man marries off his daughter to a particular gentleman on the road, and she marries herself off over to someone else on that same day in the city. Hare v'harehi bogeres, and she appears to us as a bogeres. We take a look at Rashi, v'harehi bogeres, the upper part of the narrow lines, but kanua, we checked her out, l'dasim yotzim shusav, Lios Kiddushel Kiddushin. Has she left her father's domain, and with that, her Kiddushin, her marriage, would be the marriage? Umasanua Bogeres Bobayom, and we find her on the day that we checked to be, in fact, a Bogeres. So, as we pointed out, we have a Machlokes, and the Gemara says, Rav Omar Harehi Bogeres Lefonenu. She appears to us right now as a bogeres, so we will assume that that's what she was when she married herself off, and her kiddushin are the ones that is the one that takes hold, and not her father's. Shmuel Omar Cheshinun the kiddushay shnehem. Shmuel says we have to consider that maybe she wasn't a bogeris earlier in the day, and that when the father had accepted marriage on her behalf, she was still a na'ara, an age at which the father still has jurisdiction. Amos, when is this taking place? We're saying that we checked her out, and she has the signs of being a bogeres. Ilema basoch shisha, if it's within the six-month period that we generally call the Na'arus period. And Rashi points out there are cases of a girl who matures physiologically and will show the physiological signs associated with Bagrus even before the end of the 6 months. So are those the circumstances of the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel? No. Beha Nemo Rav, would Rav say that if we're talking within the 6 month period, Harei Bogeres Lefonenu, that, well, let us conclude that she's a Bogeres because she was a Bogeres early that day because right now she shows the signs of Bogeres? No, I wouldn't say, even Rav wouldn't say that. Hashtahu de Bogra. If it's within the 6 months and it's a function of some kind of, we'll say, early maturation, all we would say, even Rav, is that right now she produced the signs of Bagrus, just as a moment before we checked her. But earlier that day, she had not yet shown those signs of Bagrus, those physiological signs indicating Bagrus. Ella? Liachar Shisha. Maybe what Rav and Shmuel are arguing about is a case where we checked her out and found her to have the signs of Bagrus after 6 months. In other words, she's 12 years and, let's say, 7 months of age. She's gone more than the 6 months before we checked her out. Well, b'ha name of Shmuel, would Shmuel say under those circumstances, chayshina likidushe shneem, that we have to consider the kiddushin not only of the girl, but of the father as well? We're past the 6 months. V'omar Shmuel, ein bein Na'arus l'Bagrus, elo shisho chadoshim bilvad. The entire Na'arus period lasts no more than 6 months. Beyond 6 months, Shmuel would concede that we would not consider the father's marriage act of having any significance. So what are the circumstances in which Rav and Shmuel are arguing? Lo tzricha de kodesh ba'u yuma de mashlim shisha. The marriage that we're talking about, where the father acted on his own and the girl acted on her own, was on the last day of the six-month Na'arus period. We'll look at Rashi together. The Kodesh B'Yoyma D'Mishlam Shis. The Rashi that we're looking at a little bit further down in the Rashi, he says, the Kodesh B'Yoyma D'Mishlam Shis Aviyah B'Vokir V'Bo'erev V'Hayom Hazer Hi B'Cheskas Shetivgar. The father on that last day accepted marriage on her behalf in the morning hours of that last day, and she in the later hours of that last day, B'Erev, toward the evening. This is a day, this last day is a day in which there is an anticipation, an accepted status of becoming a bogeres. So now we go back to the Gemara. Rav Omar, harei hi bogeres lefonenu. Rav says, look, she is now with the signs of Bogeres. Midahashta Bogeres, Bitsafranami Bogeres. From the fact that right now in the evening, toward the end of the day, she has the signs, it was that way as well in the morning. We have this retroactive tone of position with Rav. If now you see Bogeres, then in the morning she also had those signs. And we're speaking about a day in which it's reasonable to assume that the signs would appear. Ushmuel Omar Hashta hu da'aisi simonim. No, it's only now that she brings forth the signs. And therefore, in the morning, when the father had accepted marriage on her behalf, his jurisdiction still applied, because only now, toward the evening, did she produce forth the signs of Bogeres, the signs, the physiological signs that we associate with her legal independence. So Shmuel does not have this, we'll call this retroactive approach to things. And when we're speaking in terms of retroactive, we're talking about that day. That based on what you see later in the day, Shmuel's not willing to assume that that's definitely what was earlier in the day. Well, if that's the case, what is the difference between the case of the girl and the case of the mikveh? You notice we have a double underline, and that's one of our series markings. On the side of the Gemara, we have the double underline featured, and we indicate my shna, me, whatever. And you have my, what is the difference between the case of the girl and the case of the mikveh? These are kushyos l'shmuel. They're kushyos al Shmuel. They're kushyos on Shmuel's position. Because in the case of the mikveh, and you'll notice, by the way, marking-wise, diamonds appear as well. The diamonds highlight the cases. The first diamond highlights the word mikveh, and later on the page, on the second wide line, you have a diamond around hechovis. That's another situation. But in both of these cases, we have legal conclusions that have retroactive application, lemafreya. So in our markings, you'll notice we've highlighted with a dashed underline the word lemafreya. This is in contrast to the word hashta that we also had dashed underline. But lemafreya represents a question on Shmuel. Shmuel was not willing to look at things retroactively, but rather looking at her as she is right now, and what she is right now is what she is now, not what she was necessarily earlier in the day. So now the Gemara. Once we've stated Shmuel's position, that hashtahu da'isi simonim, we ask, Ushmuel, my shna mi mikveh. And according to Shmuel, who says we don't come to conclusions on a retroactive basis, what is the difference between the case of the girl and her physiological signs of bagrus appearing on that last day of the 6 months? From the case of mikveh, this non, what's the case of mikveh? Mikveh shenimdad, a mikveh that you measured, v'nimtza choser, and when you measured it, it appeared to be missing the minimum requirement of 40 sa'ah. So it's found to be lacking. Now this mikveh has been around for a while. People have been using it to immerse either themselves in it or vessels to achieve purification. And today it was measured and it was found to be missing. Missing mean lacking the minimum amount of water, 40 sa'ah. Kol taro shenasu agabov l'mafreya, all attempts at reaching purification that were done in this mikveh retroactively, whether the mikveh is in a private area or even in a public area. In a public area, we have a general approach that says sofek tuma b'rishus harabim tahor. That's when you have a doubt. Here we're ruling not as a doubt. We're ruling with certainty that even in a public area, the items or people that immersed in that mikveh tameos are defiled. They're considered as having achieved nothing by immersing in this mikveh. We take a look at the Rashi tameos, a few lines down from here. The lav sofek huela vadai. As we said, there's no issue of doubt. It's certain tumah. Almon rinon What is the principle we see from here? Kishas mitziosan masikinun lome kolei makora. As you find it now you found it to be lacking, that's the way it was from the very beginning. Hocha nami name also to by the girl. Say, may the hashta begirs besafanami begirs shikolayom hi becheska shetofi. Since now in the late afternoon we find her to be a bogeris, in the morning hour she was also a bogeris, thereby precluding the father from having any kiddushin powers. Shekol hayomi b'cheska shetovi, that whole day is a day that's fit. It's a day in which we expect her to bring forth the physiological signs of maturity. So, to review, Shmuel does not have any element of retroactive clarification. In the case of the mikveh, we view things in a retroactive fashion, namely, based on what you see now, you see it lacking now, it was lacking then from the very beginning. Response. And you'll notice we have a volcano shape whose direction alternates. And on the side of the Gemara, this represents a ma'akav. This is the use of the marking is to help keep track. The narrow part facing up, tshuva l'shmuel. It's a tshuva on behalf of Shmuel. A tshuva means a response in defense of Shmuel, and the inverted indicates a reappearance of a question. So the Gemara says, shiny hosom. This is in defense of Shmuel. The Iko lemeimar, the case of the mikveh is different, and there's good reason to say, l'mafreya, retroactively, we will declare tomei. Why? Who goes into a mikveh? Someone who was tomei, someone who was defiled. So he had an original status of defilement. So I simply maintain his original status and say, well, that he is as if he didn't immerse. So he has an original status of tumah that, we'll say, motivates us to declare the mikveh tomei l'mafreya, because the person who was trying to take advantage of the mikveh was himself originally tomei. Adarabo hamei mikvah cheskosu ve'emar lo choser. Well, to the contrary, the mikveh, when it was originally prepared, it was complete. Why not say that we stand the mikveh on its original status as not lacking? Well, since you can't say a status in contradiction to the reality, hare choser lefanecha. Well, it is missing. So who cares that it once was complete? It's missing now. It's lacking. Well, hochanami hare bogeres lefanecha. So by the same token, if you're saying that the mikveh now is choser, and that sheds light on what it was all the time, so she's a bogeris now in front of you, let us say that sheds light on what she was from the beginning of the day. Gemara says, no, hashtahu de bogra. In the case of the girl, we say, well, right now she became a bogeris, not from the morning. Well, by the mikveh then say the same, hosam nami hashtu de choser. Why not say the same thing by the mikveh? That only now it became lacking, but before, right now, and a half hour ago, an hour ago, yesterday, 10 days ago, it was a complete mikveh. Only now it became lacking. Why then does the source say that all the taros, all the attempts of purification that were done in this mikveh retroactively, tomei? The Gemara says, hosam, in the case of the mikveh, you have tarti l'reusa. The reason in the mikveh that we're going to declare the tumus to be the taros to be tomei retroactively is because you have two strikes against purification. That's tarti l'reusa, two in the direction of what's weakening the position, two in the direction of negativity. Hocha chada l'reusa. In the case of the girl, there's only one position of negativity. What? Let's spell it out. In the case of the mikveh, there are two strikes against declaring tohor. Why? Number one, there was a cheskas tumah. We know that people going into a mikveh or vessels that are immersed in a mikveh were tamei. So there was an original status of tumah. Number two, You also have a mikveh that right now is chaser, it's lacking. So you have very little to stand on to suggest that previous immersions would have been successful. However, in the case of the girl, there's only hochah chadul reusa. That is, that she didn't have a cheskas bogeres. So that Rashi, he says, hocha, toward the end of the narrow lines, hocha gabi kidushe hoav, chado lereusa hu deika. That we have only, we'll say, one position. This, of course, let us emphasize that we're defending Shmuel's position by saying this. In the case of the mikveh, you know why you went retroactively? Because you had two strikes against saying otherwise. You had two strikes against accepting a retroactive state of tahara, of purification. In the case of the girl, you have only one element. When we speak of chado lereusa in the context of Shmuel, we can say that you have only one element of only one element that would weaken the father's kiddushin, and that is that she is right now a bogeres. However, you don't have a chazaka that she was a bogeres, because you're on the last day of the 6 months. Prior to this day, she was assumed to be, in fact, a nara. So there was no cheskas bagrus before today. Therefore, the position that Shmuel takes remains a tenable position, even though by mikveh we do evaluate in retroactive terms. Not so in the case of the girl and the father's kiddushin. The Gemara continues with a question. It's again a long question. Ushmuel Maishno Mechovis. What's the difference between the case of the girl, where you're not willing to say, let us view her Limafreya as a bogeres from the beginning of the day, where in the case of Chavis, which we haven't explained yet, but the case of Chavis has to do with the general realm of tithing, the Truma tithe. And in the case of the Chavis, you'll notice marking-wise, we have an extensive piece of this Gemara in brackets. If you skip the brackets momentarily, you see it says, L'Rabbonon Tevel L'Mafreya. We want to focus on the main point. Gemara markings attempts to highlight the main point in a logical flow, so as not to lose sight of the forest for the trees. We see in at the end of this long question that according to the Rabbanon, we will be declaring the tithes as ineffective. L'Mafreya means retroactively. You will see a situation where right now I see a reason for the ineffectiveness of the tithe. And since right now I see the ineffectiveness of the tithe, I will say also retroactively, the tithing was ineffective. So based on what you see now, you do make conclusions retroactively. Why then does Shmuel say otherwise in the case of the girl? That even though right now I see her to be a bogeres, I don't say that retroactively to the beginning of the morning hours she was also already a bogeres. In order to answer that question, once again you will see the back and forth discussion in which we again employ our volcano shape with the alternating directions. Now the Gemara. Ushmuel, Maishna Mechovis. Note that we have a long question. However, most of the question you'll see is in a brackets. So be ready for a skip. So the Gemara asks, according to Shmuel, who does not judge things in terms of retroactive clarification, Mishna Mechavis, what's different between the case of the girl and her father's marriage from the case of the Chavis? If we skip the brackets momentarily, you see it says the Rabbonon Tevel Lemafreya. According to the Rabbonon, as opposed to the opinion of Reb Shimon that's found in this bracketed section, the Rabbonon say we look at it as Tevel Lemafreya, that you find it right now, the Chovis, the receptacle, the barrel, you find right now to be unacceptable as a source of tithing. So just like now it's unacceptable retroactively as well. So what you see now determines what was in the past. Not so in the case of the girl. We see her now as a Bogeris, but Shmuel says that doesn't mean that in the morning she was a Bogeris. And as the Gemara goes on, you can see there's the same back and forth style analysis as we had in the case of the mikveh. In the meantime, we do have an extensive piece of Gemara within the brackets. Let's go through it, but bearing in mind that the focus as far as the flow of the Gemara is on the opinion of the Rabbonon that we just featured. So now, what's the case of the Chovis? Desanya, hoya boidek es Chovis lahafrish oleo truma. A man had a barrel of wine, and he had also, in addition to this one barrel of wine, he had, let us say, 100 other barrels of wine. These barrels of wine need to be tithed. He designates one barrel of wine to be a source of trumos for all of his other barrels. So as he opens up, let us say, each additional barrel of wine, he says that I want the truma that needs to be tithed from this new barrel to be in the designated barrel. Let's assume that the designated barrel has enough content to serve as the truma for many subsequent barrels of wine. So he had checked a barrel of wine, found it to be good wine, and it will serve as the truma for his other barrels. So the source says, V'achar kach nimseis chometz. He found it after a while that the designated barrel was vinegar. The wine went sour. Now, you cannot rely on chometz, on vinegar, as being the tithe for your other barrels of wine. So you had designated a barrel sometime in the past, and the next time you checked it, it turned out to be non-wine. It turned out to be chometz vinegar. It went bad. In the meantime, you had tithed relying on that designated barrel. You had consumed the wine in many other barrels relying on that designated barrel to serve as the source of tithing. So the rule is kol shloshi yomim vadai mikan ve'elech sofek. Now, how to explain this source of the 3 days? There is a state of certainty. And beyond the 3 days, we're in a state of doubt. This itself is a machlokis. The Amoroyim in Maseches Bava Basra argue about how to define those 3 days. Is it that we say the first 3 days you can rely on it as having been good wine, but from beyond the first 3 days. Now, that might have been several months ago, but beyond those initial first 3 days, you have to start being suspicious. There's another opinion that says that no, that only during the last 3 days do we say it was definitely vinegar. But prior to the last 3 days, we have a suffix. Maybe it was still good wine. For our purposes in this Gemara, and as far as our explanation is concerned, it's not necessary to commit ourselves to either one of the approaches. Suffice it to say that we have illustrated a situation where there was something in the past, there's something that you see now, and there's a gap in time in which we have a certain amount of certainty, and beyond which we have a state of doubt. Let's continue in the Gemara. V'raminon, we raise a contradiction between this case of the Chavis, V'raminon Chavis HaMikveh, versus the case of Mikveh before. Maishno Dehochavadai, what is different about the case of Mikveh where we say that retroactively it was certainly a lacking Mikveh? Retroactively, nothing was accomplished in terms of purification. Umay shna dehacha, and in the case of the Chavis, we say that in terms of the past, suffek, there's an element of doubt. We don't say that it was certainly not a tithe. V'yomar Rav Chanina Misura, man tana Chavis, who is the author of Chavis, that spoke in terms of doubt, Rabbi Shimon he. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Degabi mikveh nami sveiko mashvi. That when you look at Rabbi Shimon and his version of the mikveh, there's also an element of doubt. Desanya, and that will be illustrated in the following source. Kol taros shenasu agabov lemafreya. All the attempts of purification in the mikveh. When you look at it retroactively, after having found it to be a lacking mikveh, whether it's in a private domain or a public domain, we declare everything to be tomei. In other words, the mikveh was not effective from the very beginning. Rabbi Shimon Omer, birshus harabim toros, birshus hayochid toilin. In a public domain, we will consider whatever had been immersed in the mikveh to be effective. That's the concept of sofek tuma b'rishus harabim is tohor. B'rishus hayochid, in a private domain, toilin means we suspend. It's in a state of suspense. It's a state of doubt. Avol, l'rabbonon, but when it comes to the opinion of the rabbonon, vis-a-vis the chavis, vis-a-vis the wine, tevel l'mafreya, all the barrels that you had assumed were properly tithed based on that designated barrel, lo and behold, they are now understood to be untithed. Under means non-tithed. Rashi, at the second line from the bottom, tevel l'mafreya, ze sheniskan al yidei chavezu de aminon. Midahashta ichmitz mikonami choymetz, vochinami neimo, midahashta bogeres, bitzafronami bogeres. So just like the Rabbonon say in the case of Tevel, in the case of the tithes, the barrel that you had assumed to be tithed based on the designated barrel is no longer tithed because the designated barrel was found to be vinegar. And since now you found it to be vinegar, it was considered chometz vinegar from the very beginning. So all the tithes that you had relied upon are turned out to be false. So just like by the case of the chavis, we say retroactively all the tithing was ineffective. You were relying on a barrel that you retroactively see you should not have relied on for your tithing. Say the same thing by the girl. You find her now to be a bogeris. She was a bogeris from the morning. So this is a challenge to Shmuel. The Gemara responds, Shaini Hosom, there by the barrel it's different. There, all produce, all wine barrels had an original status of being untithed. So, it having been considered untithed, right now I maintain that state by saying it is untithed. The Amar lo niskan means it hasn't been. Niskan literally means fixed, but it hasn't been tithed. So that the barrel that I have in front of me, which I was hoping to be tithed by virtue of the designated barrel, I can't say that, because the barrel that I want to use for myself had a status of being tevel till now anyway. Well, adarabo, to the contrary, hamed yayin al cheskosoi ve'emar lo hichmitz. Why not say that the wine originally had the assumed status and identity of being wine, and say that it didn't go bad? What do you mean? The Gemara says back, Hare hichmitz lefanecha, but it's in front of you now, it's chaymitz. How can you suggest the idea that, say it wasn't vinegar, say it didn't ferment, but it did. Ferment meaning go sour. Well, if you're saying Hare hichmitz lefanecha as your explanation for why the tithing is no good, so hochanami hare hi bogeres lefanenu. So by the same token, the girl right now is a bogeres. So say that she was a bogeres from the morning. No, hashto hu de bogra. As far as the girl is concerned, Shmuel will tell you, all I can say is, right now, she became a bogeres, but she wasn't that way in the morning. Well, hosom nami, hashtahu de'achmetz, so then why in the case of the barrel do we not say that, well, only right now it became choymetz? And we don't say that. The Gemara answers, hosom, in the case of the wine, tarti l're'usa. There are two strikes against the wine from being considered wine. Hocha chado l're'usa hu de'ika. Here, there's only, in the case of the girl, there's only one re'usa, there's only one reason for discounting the father's kiddushin, and that is that right now she's a bogeres. But in the case of the wine, you have two reasons to view it as ineffective, and that is, right now it is chometz, and you also had a cheskas tevel on the wine barrels. In other words, they had the state, they had the given status of being untithed. So therefore, since they started off as being untithed, and the barrel you were relying on is right now vinegar, you don't have too much to rely on. And therefore, in the case of the barrels, we say you can't you can't rely on it, and we say it is tevel amafreya. Not so in the case of the girl, to say that since I see her now as a bogeres, therefore I'm going to assume she was a bogeres earlier, because in the case of the girl, true, right now she's a bogeres, but she didn't have a cheskas bagrus earlier. After all, this is the last day of the six-month Nahara period. So Shmuel maintains his position that you cannot discount the possibility she was a Nahara earlier in the day, giving way to her father's marriage being the one to reckon with. Hence, Shmuel's opinion is suffic with regard to the girl and her to whom she is married. As we go on, we have a new marking, a bow tie shape, and under the mivne heading on in the margin, you see it says Nisyon Islamid Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel Kimachlokes Tanoim, attempts on the part of the Gemara to set up the disagreement between Rav and Shmuel as a Tanaic disagreement. You see, we have a number one immediately, and about a third of the way down the top on Omid Beis, you will see number two. The Gemara, Neimo Ketanoi. Now, you'll notice we're using a long marking. In effect, it's a long question. But instead of putting a kuf, we've simply designated this as number one, relying on our mivneh explanation, pointing out that here we are starting a question. So, shall we say the machlokas ravenshin was a machlokas tanoim? Name o ketanoi. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. Mi motzi miyad mi. Here we have a Shchiv Meirah, who is giving away his property to others. I said Shchiv Meirah, but that might be overstating the case. We have a doubt. We have someone that assigned all of his property to others, leaving nothing for himself. If the person that did that, when he did it, was in the state of being deathly ill, we call Shchiv Meirah. So then there's one standard that applies. If the person that did that did so while he was a bori, while he was healthy, so a different standard applies. One thing is for sure, someone assigned all of his property to others. On the top line in the Rashi, mi motzi miyad mi hakosev nechosov leachirim. Someone assigned all of his property to others. Velo shir klum, he left nothing for himself. The kaimalon, we hold b'shchiv meirah shein matanos matono im omad. If the shchiv meirah, the person who when doing this was deathly ill, subsequently gets better, the gifts, the distribution of his properties is off. The goli daite midolo shir midi, he has demonstrated, has revealed his mindset by leaving nothing for himself. The mitzava machmas misahoya, he was divvying out his properties in anticipation of what he thought was death. Ah, so when he gets better, so the whole reason for his divvying out his properties falls away. He gets it all back. If the person was in full health when he divvied out his properties, leaving nothing for himself, matonoso matono, the gift is a binding gift. It's not contingent upon his thinking about something happening. He gave it out. That's why, for whatever reason. But not because of not because of thoughts of impending death. V'achshav hu omer shchiv meirah. You see, now he's telling us, oh, when he gave it out, he was deathly ill. V'hein omrim, and the receivers say, bori hoya, he was healthy, and we have all the right in the world to keep holding on that which we received. Mi motzi nechosim yadmi. In a case like this, who gets the properties? So the Gemara continues. We asked mi motzi miadmi, who has the upper hand, who gets away from the others? Who motzi miadam, the original owner, takes away from them below raya, without having to bring any proof. Rashi says, "Hu motzi miyodam," on the first narrow line, "im omdu v'hirzik benechasim v'ein." He can take away from them the properties that they claim to have received. He can take it away from them. V'ein tzorach lahavi raya shohayos shemar. He doesn't have to bring proof that he was deathly ill when he distributed it. V'afilu hu bori achshav b'shas chazora. Even if right now he is healthy, at the time of the return of the properties, lo aminon, we do not say midahashta bori mekor b'shas maton anami bori. From the fact that he's healthy now, he was healthy at the time he gave out the properties. In other words, we don't say that. So the Tanakama, the first opinion, is saying that the original owner extracts the properties from whoever took hold of them, from the one who, let's not just say from whoever, but from the one to whom the properties were given, and he can take it away from them without bringing any proof. That's below raya, without needing to bring any proof that he was a shchiv meirah. He's claiming it was a shchiv meirah, and that's enough reason for him to get the properties back without having to bring proof. They, the receivers, cannot take away from him, the original owner, without bringing proof that, in fact, he was a bori. So they cannot take away from him on the grounds that their claim is correct unless they bring proof. Divrei Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Noson Omer, in bori hu, if right now he is, the original owner is healthy, then olov lavi raya shoyer shchimera. He'll have to bring proof to back up his position that he was a shchiv mera, thereby entitling him to get the properties back. And if he doesn't get, if he doesn't bring proof that he was a shchiv mera, the properties remain in the hands of who in the hands of the receiver, indicating that we base ourselves on the way he, the original owner, appears to us. He appears, if the original owner appears right now as bori, so bori, as we said before, a bori, or bori who gives away his properties, it's a full-fledged, no strings attached gift or distribution of property. So if right now the original owner happens to be bori, he's on weak footing to get his property back. He can't get his property back unless he brings a proof there was a shimira. So, and if he doesn't bring proof, how do we rule based on what we see now? What we see now is the way he was originally. If he's healthy now, we assume he was healthy at the time he distributed. Oh, that sounds a lot like Shitas Rav. You see her now as a bogera. She was that way in the morning. Ve'im shchiv meirahu, and if right now he's deathly ill, deathly ill is grounds for getting back properties if you get better. So if he's a shchiv meirah right now, aleim lovi raya shibori hoya, they'll have to bring proof in order to hold on to the properties, even if he gets better. They'll have to bring proof that he was healthy at the time that he gave it to them. At this point then, Neymar Rav, the Omer Karabi Nosan, should we say that Rav, who said the way you see her now is the way we assume her to be earlier, that's like Reb Nosan. For Shmuel, the Omer Karabi Yankiv, and Shmuel, who doesn't look at the way things are right now, that's not the determining factor, according to Rabbi Yaakov. So he would be like Shmuel. So that the Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, would parallel this earlier Machlokas Tanoim, Omar Loch Rav. Now here we have a diamond marking on the side of the Gemara. We have a structural note. You can see the Mivnet where a diamond is featured. Rav and Shmuel, Kol Echol Omer She'en Dino Ketanoi. Each one, Rav and Shmuel, will say that their respective opinions regarding the girl are not opinions that are the subject of a machlokes tanoim. As we've pointed out many times, it is not to the advantage of any amora to have his position to be the subject of a machlokes tanoim. So you can see in our markings, we have a long answer marking with a diamond highlighting the name Rav and later the name Shmuel. And the each one will then point out that they are not the machlokes tanoim. We mentioned we have a long answer marking the Gemara. Omar Loch Rav. Rav, who spoke about the Bogeris that we see now as such, she was also that way in the morning, as Rav said. Ano di Amri Afilu Karebi Yankiv. I say my opinion, even in light of Rabbi Yankiv, who appeared above in the case of the controversy over the Kesev Kol Nechosov. Ad Kan, Lokum Rabbi Yankiv Hosom, Rabbi Yaakov said his point in the case of Kosev Kol Nechosav, the Iko Lameimar Hameid Momon Al Cheskoso. There, the original party had a Cheskas Momon. He had the status of being the possessor of the property. Being that he had the status of the owner, of being the owner, so now that a controversy arises, he has the additional strength of his original status. And hence, he is able to maintain, even take away the property from the receivers, if they had taken it, without needing to bring any proof. Aval hocha, in the case of the girl, the Nara, the Bogeres, where right now she's a Bogeres, Mine Mohammed Gufa Cheskoso, on the last day of those 6 months, can you say that she had an original Nara status and that's what carries the day? You can't say that. You cannot say that she has a Cheskas Haguf of Narus on the last day of those 6 months, because on that last day of the 6 months we are anticipating a change. In other words, without any external factors, without any, let's say, a contest between her marriage versus her father's marriage, even without that, on the last day of those 6 months, her physiological status is not of any certainty. So we don't have any pre-existing chazaka vis-a-vis that last day of the 6 months. And therefore, the fact that in the case of the momon, Rabbi Yaakov says, we give it to the one who had the Chazkas Momon, the original status of ownership. We don't have that in order to justify the father's marriage by saying, let us assume she had a Cheskas Narus. As we said, we've already repeated it several times, you cannot say that regarding the last day of the 6 months, the day on which we already anticipate a physiological change. Ushmuel Omar. Shmuel, who, in the case of the girl, does not base himself on the way things appear right now. He says, Ano diyamri afilu l'Rebbe Noson. My line of thinking can fit into Rebbe Noson. Ad kan lokam Rebbe Noson hosam. In the case of Kosev Kol Nechosov, the Kulei Alma Becheskas Briem Kaimi. Everyone has the assumed status of being healthy. Man de komapik nafshe mechazoka, the one who is trying to extract himself from that assumed status by the claim that he was a shchiv meira, that he was deathly ill and therefore entitled to get his property back. Have ole l'sui raya. It's upon him to bring proof. Aval hocha. In the case of the marriage, where we suspect maybe she was a nara, miko mafko nafsho mechazoka dekamei, is she extracting herself from some previous assumed status? So, just to review with a slightly greater deal of a level of clarity, to show how Shmuel can fit in to Rebbe Noson, up till now, Rebbe Noson said what he did. In the case of someone who assigned away all his properties, that if right now he happens to be healthy and he wants to win his case, he's going to have to bring proof that he was a Shchiv Meira. The reason for that is is that we assume people to have been healthy. And at the time he assigned his property, that's probably what he was. He, the original owner here, wants to change that assumed status. He has to bring proof to that effect. So that's over there in the case of Kosef Nechosov. But in the case of the girl, when we suspect she may have been a Nara, giving credence to the father's Kiddushin, are we extracting her from some type of chazaka? After all, we're talking about the last day of the 6 months. Up till that point, she in fact was a Nara. By assuming that on that last day she was still a Nara, isn't an extraction, isn't a departure from some previous state. If anything, it's simply maintaining the previous state. Therefore, Shmuel's position remains justified, even according to Rebbe Nosson. Name all Kehani Tanoi. As we go on in the Gemara, we suggest maybe the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel parallels the following Machlokes Tanoyim. Kitcha Avia Baderech, the Kitcha Atzmo Ba'ir. The father married her off to some man he met on the road, and she married herself to someone she met in town. Varehi Bogeres, and right now she is an adult. She appears as an adult. Tana Chada Hare Hi Bogeres Lefanenu. One source says, well, we look at the way she appears right now, and with that, we would seem then to discount the father's marriage, because as a Bogeres, the father would have no role to play. V'tanya idach, cheshinon l'kidushe shnehem. And the other Tanaic source says, we suspect both marriages as having validity, and therefore, if she wants to marry someone else, she'll have to get a get from both of those men. My love, is it not so then that these two sources, Aleph and Beis, Chad k'Rav, v'Chad k'Shmuel? Source Aleph would parallel Rav, source Beis would parallel Shmuel. Lo, we don't have to present these two Tanaic sources as paralleling Rav and Shmuel. Edi v'edi k'Shmuel. Both sources can fit into the scheme of things as Shmuel sees it. Kan b'makoshosoy, kan b'shein makoshosoy. Source Aleph is where she says to her father, hey, Dad, you know, from yesterday I was already a Bogeres. And source Beis, kan b'shein makoshoso, she's not contradicting, countering her father, and therefore we have to consider both. With that resolution in mind of these two sources not being contradictory, v'neimo midemasniso lo pligi, amoroi nami lo pligi. Just like these two Tanaic sources are not at odds with one another, Rav and Shmuel, in fact, are not arguing with one another. Rav, who says, you go according to what she is right now, she appears as a Bogeres, that's in a case where she challenges what her father did by the claim that from yesterday she was already a Bogeres, leaving no room for the father to operate in the next morning of the Yom HaDemishlam Shis, the last day of the 6 months. And Shmuel, who says, Choshish Lishneim, is where she didn't counter the father's actions. The Gemara responds to this, and you'll notice we have a long answer marking. V'tisbara. The Tisbara introduces an answer where the Gemara is calling to order the suggestion. You cannot say that the Amoraim, Rav and Shmuel, are not arguing. Why not? Rav Yosef, Breda Rav Menashe Midvil, Rav Yosef, the son of Rav Menashe from Dvil, Ovad Uvdo Kavose de Rav, he issued a ruling like Rav, namely, a girl on the last day of her 6 months And her father married her off in the morning, and she married her herself later in the day. And he ruled, like Rav, that you're not choshesh. You're not going to consider that maybe earlier in the day she was a nara, leaving room for the father's marriage to take hold. So Rav Yosef ruled like Rav, the ikpid Shmuel, the Omar, and Shmuel was irate. He was upset, and he responded with the following, sarcastic remark. He says to Rav Yosef, he says, Kule alma kaili le bekava zuta. Fahai midrabonon kaili le bekava rabba. All the rest of the chachomim were given a small measure of wisdom. And this one, meaning you, received a large measure of wisdom. In other words, you're so great that you can rule like that. And if it were so that Rav and Shmuel are not arguing, why did Shmuel get upset when he heard Rav Yosef's ruling like Rav that didn't consider that maybe she was an Ara? Dilmo kiyavaruvda. Also, maybe when he ruled like Rav, since she comes in front of us as a Bogeres, we view her as a Bogeres from the beginning of the day. That's because she countered her father by saying, "I was already a Bogeres from the day before." And yet, Shmuel doesn't. And yet, Shmuel was upset. So that. You see from here that obviously Rav and Shmuel are arguing with one another, and with regardless of what the girl says or doesn't say on the last day of the 6 months, if she appears as a Bogeris in front of us, according to Rav, only her marriage is of validity, or only her marriage counts. According to Shmuel, even though now she appears as a Bogeres, maybe in the morning she was still a Nara, and you have to consider that maybe her of the father's marriage was the marriage. Omar le morzutra lorvashi, hochi omar amemar, hilchoso kavose de Shmuel. Morzutra informs Ravashi that amemar rules like Shmuel. You have to consider both her marriage and the father's marriage. Ravashi omar hilchoso kavose de Rav. And Ravashi himself holds like Rav, Hilchoso Kavosei de Rav, and the Gemara itself rules like Rav. As we approach the new Mishnah, we have a topic heading on the side, Odom Shiyotzel Medinas Hayam, a man who went abroad. V'tayin, and he makes the following claim, Zu Ishti V'elu Boneha. This is my wife, and these are her children. At what point, when, under what circumstances do we insist that the man bring proof regarding their pureness of pedigree? The Mishnah. Mi shiyotza hu v'ishto, let me just say, a man left town along with his wife. In other words, prior to their departure, they were known as husband and wife in their particular community. So that means that she was a woman that had pureness of pedigree because they had checked her out at the time they got married. So this man left town with his wife to Medina Sayam, abroad. Uvahu v'ishto vanov, and he returned, himself, his wife, and children. Fiomar, and he says, Isha Shiyotza Simi, the Misayam, Harehizu. The woman that left with me to the trip abroad, here she is. Might have been away for a while, she doesn't look the same. So he tells her, this is the same woman I had before we left. Fiyelu Bonel, and these are her sons. Ein Tzorach Lahovi Raya, Lo Al Hoisha. He doesn't have to bring any proof regarding pureness of pedigree regarding his wife. She was already checked out. When they got married originally, Veloi al Habonim, and no need to bring proof regarding the children. Now, Rashi points out that later in the Gemara, we're talking about small children that are clinging to their to this woman, i.e. their mother, children that cling to a woman, we assume that to be their mother. So there's no need to bring any proof to their pureness of pedigree through witnesses. We continue. Mesa v'elu boneha. He comes back from Medina Sayam, and he comes without his wife, but with the claim she died, and these are her sons. Mevi Rayo al Habonim. He will have to bring proof that these are the sons from that woman. Vieno Mevi Rayo al Huisha. He doesn't have to bring any further proof regarding the woman. She was already, as we said, given the stamp of pedigree approval, because she had been checked out at the time they got married. Now, a new scenario. A man comes to back to town, and he says, Isha nasasi mesayam, harei hizu. Here is a woman that I'm bringing with me. This is the woman that I met while abroad. V'elu boneha, and these are her children. So as far as the woman and her pureness of pedigree are concerned, she hasn't undergone a check. This is the first time we're meeting her. So the Mishnah says, Mevi Rayal Isha. He has to bring proof regarding the pureness of pedigree of the woman. The Ein Tzarich Lavi Rayal upon him, and he doesn't have to bring any proof regarding the children, because, as we said earlier, and the Gemara will tell us itself at this point, that the little children are clinging unto her. Mesa v'elu boneha. He comes back home with the story that I had married a woman while abroad. She died, and these are her children. So we don't have a clinging to mother factor, because he claims that she's not here. She's dead. Tzorach l'avirayo al ho'isha v'al habonim. Let's take a look at Rashi, a couple lines down from here. Meisa v'elu boneo, she'en kan shum ho'ichocho. We have no proof of anything. Then, mevi raya al ho'isha shim yucheses. He has to bring proof that the woman that he claims to have married was of pureness of pedigree. V'al habonim she'me'oisa. And proof that these children were from that woman. We continue now with the Gemara. Omar Rabo Baravuna v'chulon b'kruchen achareha. In all the cases that we said, you did not have to bring proof on regarding the children. Those were cases where they were clinging unto her. Little kids that cling unto a woman, you assume that that's their mother. So once we establish pureness of pedigree of the mother, either now or something we had done in the past, and you see these little, you see little children clinging unto the woman, that's good enough for us to assume their pureness as well. Tonu Rabbanan, Isha Nasasi Mesayam. Man claims, I married a woman while abroad. Maybe Rayal Isha. V'Ensof Lofi Rayal Abonim. He has to bring proof regarding the pureness of pedigree of the woman, and no need to bring proof regarding the children. Umevi Rayal Agdoilim, V'Ensof Lofi Rayal Alaktanim. Proof is necessary with regard to adult children. No proof is necessary regarding the young children. Bamed v'murim b'isha achas. That which we've said till now applies to a case of one woman, one wife. Avol b'shtei noshim mevi raya al ho'isha v'al habonim al hagdolim v'al haktanim. Rashi explains this three lines from the bottom. Be'isha achas shomar isha achas nososi. Avalomar shtei noshim hoyu umeso achas v'elu boneho shelzu. If he tells us that I had been married to two women, one of them died, and these are the children of this one, Mevi Raya Oleho Shehi Miyuchesis. He'll have to bring proof that this one is of pureness of pedigree. Velabonim Sheheim Boneho. And regarding the children, that they are the children of that woman, the woman that he brought proof to her pedigree. Whether they're adult children or minors, even if they're clinging unto the woman, the fact that they're clinging unto the woman, that he just brought proof that she is of pureness of pedigree, that's not enough. We can't rely on kruchin, deshemo bonel shechaverto hayu v'gidlosan. Maybe the other woman, the woman that died, was the actual biological mother, and this woman is the one that raised them, and as a result of her close connection with them, that's why they're clinging unto her. Omar Reish Lakish. We continue at the top of Daf Pei. Lo shonu ela bekodshei hagvul. The reliance upon kruchin achareha, clinging unto her, as being sufficient proof to their pureness of pedigree, once we prove the woman's pureness, that's true with regard to Kodshei Hagvul, regarding Truma. Kodshei Hagvul is an expression referring to Truma. And namely, if the man who's coming with his story that this is my wife, etc., if he happens to be a Kohen, so we'll enable those children based on Kruchin Acharea to eat Truma. Avol biyuchasin lo, but regarding marriage and pedigree considerations, we're not going to rely on kruchin acharea. If, let us say, the woman that you just brought proof is of pure pedigree, and there are little kids clinging unto her, and amongst them are girls, we're not going to say that those girls can marry into the kahuna. Kahuna demands a certain level of pureness of pedigree. We're not going to allow that until proof is brought that these girls are this mother's daughters. Proof meaning witnesses, something beyond the mere fact that they're clinging unto her. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Afilu B'yuchasin. And Rabbi Yochanan says, once you bring proof that the mother is of pure pedigree, the clinging factor is good enough to impose the pureness status on the children. And a girl amongst them, a little girl amongst them, can eventually marry a Kohen without needing to bring any further proof. V'yozda Rabbi Yochanan Tame. You'll notice we have a very long point marking. Rabbi Yochanan, in saying that we rely on this, we'll say, clinging factor, on this assumed status that it is a chazoka, that children who cling unto a woman, that is their mother. This approach of Rabbi Yochanan is consistent with what he has said elsewhere. Namely, that we're soymech, that we rely on chazaka. The Omar Reb Chiya Bar Abba and Rabbi Yochanan, 3 points are made. Malkin ala chazakas will issue court lashings simply based on assumed status, meaning on something that we know only because of a chazaka, even without formal testimony. And we'll see illustrations of each one of these points. Number two, Seiklin v'sorfen ala chazokas. Court execution can be imposed, whether it's stoning or sreif or burning, based on chazoka. And point three, which is a slight departure from this, and that is vein sorfen truma ala chazokas. But we don't burn truma based on a chazoka. the Rashi says v'ein sof in truma chazokas dover shu tome mitoch chazoka v'lo mitoch shu raya, something that is assumed to be defiled because of assumptions, because of assumed status, and not because of actual proof. Dvinoga betruma, and then that entity that was assumed to be tome touched truma. Kigon tinok shu stama muksut tome, a toddler we assume to be tome. Shemechapes ba'ashpos sheisham nevelus yishrotzim. Why does he have the chazok of being tome? Why does he have the assumed status of tuma? Because toddlers dig into garbage heaps where you have dead animals, you have carcasses and dead creatures that impart tuma. And then, if he touched truma, if he, this toddler, then touched the tithe given to kohanim, which needs to be maintained in purity, ein sorfen ela toilin. We do not burn the truma, but rather we suspend it. We hang it up. We leave it aside to rot on its own. Kiforsh taimot yarminon hamid isa cheskas taro v'elu hu mimiu tinokos shelo tipechen. We'll see more about that later. We mentioned 3 points in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and they were Malkin al-Chazokos, Sekin v'Surfin al-Chazokos, V'in Surfin Trum al-Chazokos. These 3 points are now explained by the Gemara, and that you can see is featured with a double underline, and on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivneh, we indicate Dinov Shel Rabbi Yochanan, number 1, Malkin al-Chazokos, number 2, Sekin v'Surfin al-Chazokos, and number 3, Ein Surfin Trum al-Chazokos. What is meant by each one of these? Well, Malkin al Chazokas, Rav Yehuda, based on Rav Yehuda's teaching. Yom Rav Yehuda, Huchsuko Nido B'Shcheinai Seha, if a woman was seen walking around with clothing that she ordinarily wears during her menstruation period. This was a practice that you find elsewhere in the Shas, that women, when they were Tameos, they would wear certain articles of clothing, worn out clothing, if you will. You can see, I think you can see more about that in Maseches Ksubis, where the Gemara speaks about blois, worn out clothing, the value in them for the woman is that she wears them when she's prohibited to her husband. Those are called big day nidus. So huchsuka nidav shchisa means a woman was seen to be walking around on a given day with these clothing. Baila loikala mishum nida. If her husband has intimacy with her, he is subject to court lashings because of violating nida. If he is warned not to be with her because she is a nida, and he goes ahead and they warn him and say, you know, you'll get lashed if you are with her, and he goes ahead and does so anyway, he will be subject to lashings. Do we know for sure she's a nida? No, we know that she was wearing the big day nidus. That means she had a cheskas nidus. Number 2, soiklin v'sorfen ala chazokis. What do you mean by court execution based on chazaka? Here we have a story, here we have a case. Ish v'isha, tinok v'tinokas. A man, a woman, a child, whether it be a baby girl, or it be a boy or a girl, shigdilu b'so habayas. And this unit, man, woman, and children, grew up. They, years went by and they were together in a house. Well, if you see a man, a woman, and a couple of kids in a house, what do you assume? And when we use the term assume, this is the term chazoka that we had above. What do you assume? You assume that this is the mother and father, and these are their children. Therefore, niskolim ze al ze v'nisrafim ze al ze. If the boy in that unit of people I want to use the word family unit. But as far as the outsider is concerned, all they see is a man, a woman, and little kids. We assume that that's the mother of the little boy, and that little boy who grew up and may have had intimacy with the woman that we assume to be his mother. If there were witnesses and they warned him, do not have intimacy with her, that's your mother, and he goes so and does so anyway, he is liable to being stoned. And likewise, if the man, the father in that unit of people has intimacy with the girl, that subjects her to the penalty of sreifa, court execution through burning. In all of these cases, you don't have two witnesses that testify that this is the father, this is the mother, but rather it's an assumed status that people have when they live like that. Amar Reb Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Reb Shimon ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapora, Maisa Bisha Shebosa Yerushalayim Vetino Mukav Lo Ksefa. A story involved a woman who came to Jerusalem with a baby on her shoulders, and Vigdiloso, and she raised the child, Ubaaleo, and that child, as became an adult, had intimacy with that woman, the one that raised him, Vivim Lebesim Visoklum, and they were brought to the court, and they were stoned. Lo Mipnei Shebino Vadai Elipnei Shekoru Chachareo. Not that we know with certainty that that was her son, but rather we saw him following her all the time until he became an adult. At that point, he then decided to have intimacy with her, and we stoned them. V'ein sorfen truma al hachazokis. T'yomar Rav Shimon Lokish sorfen hachazokis. Rav Yochanan amar ein sorfen. We're following Rav Yochanan throughout this discussion. We have a long point marking, and that's very valuable over here. He is the one that pointed out Ein Sorfen Al HaChazokas. That was point three that he made, initially seen five lines from the top of this omit. So here you have we had a long point, and regarding burning of Truma based on Chazoka, Rav Shimon Milokish says you will. We spoke about the case before about a toddler touching Truma. We assume that a toddler has the status of being Tomei. That's an assumption. Do we burn the Truma based on that? According to Reish Lakish, yes. When we speak about burning Truma, we're talking about the assumption that it has become defiled because of the contact of that toddler with it. Rabbi Yochanan says, Ein Sarfin. And this is the reason we brought this whole point in, to show that Rabbi Yochanan in relying on Chazaka says what he says. That will give Malkus, will issue court executions based on Chazaka. When it comes to burning Truma, there we don't rely on Chazaka. There's a Rashi, a few lines up from here. We have a star there to help you find it. V'ein sorfen truma chazokas, dover shu tomei mitoch chazoka v'lo mitoch shu raya, v'noga b'truma. This is the Rashi we read before. Kegon tinok shu stamo muchsuk tomei, shemechapis ba shesh bo neveh shkotzim, ushrotzim, v'noga b'truma ein sorfen elo toilin. Now the reason for that is kinu beforish taimo kin amrinu hamedi sachas kas tara vielu hu mimiu tinokos shelo tipeach. In the case of the issue of burning of the truma, there's a counter force, a counter consideration for why not to burn the truma. This will appear as we go on, and then more. The explanation for that appears as we go on. Now that we've come to the end of the long point, we Gemara says we ozdu letamayu, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who argue regarding sreif of truma based on chazaka, is their own consistency with what we will see later in terms of Reish Lakish and Reb Yochanan. Disnan. Tinok shenimtzo betzado iso botzek biyodo. A toddler, a child, was found next to some dough. And there was a clump of dough in his hands. Rabbi Meir Metayer v'chomim mitamin b'nei shedakish tinok l'tapeach. Rabbi Meir declares the other dough as being tohor. The chachomim declare it defiled. Why? Because it's the way of children to litapeach. Litapeach means to handle shrutzim and nevelos that are in garbage heaps. V'havinon ba, and we ask, my taima the Rabbi Meir, why is Rabbi Meir so lenient and declares it tohor? Kosova rov tinokas mitapchin umiyudei mitapchin. Rabbi Meir accepts the reality that the majority of children handle tomei things. They're metapchin. There's a minority that do not. The dough was prepared with the assumed status of being undefiled. So now you have to weigh the different considerations. Usmoch mi'uto l'chazoka. You attach the mute of children that do not handle shkotzim and rotzim in garbage heaps. So there's a minority of children that are tohor, and there is the status of the original status of the dough that's tohor. So combine these two factors, isra le ruba, and that weakens the majority. So even though there was a majority that majority of children that metapchin, which would have been in the direction of declaring defiled, that's offset by combining the miut with the chazaka. V'rabbonon miuta kamada lesedomi. The rabbonon, as opposed to Rabbi Meir, view when you have something that's of a minority status as if it's not there. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, is consistent with his felt well-known position that chushishin lemiuta, that you consider the presence of the miut. It's not considered void in the face of a majority. So the rabbonon who say miuto kamando lesei domi, what then are you left with? Ruba versus v'chazoka. Ruba, meaning the majority of children handle shkotzim motzim in garbage heaps, so that's the majority in favor of tuma. There's a chazoka, the original status of the dough being tohar. Ruba odif. When you pit off a rove against a chazoka, so the rove is stronger. Therefore the rabbonon are going to be metame, because the rove of children who handle rove of children handle shkotzim motzim, shkotzim and nevelos, making them tome. Omar Reish Lakish Mishum Raboshaya. This is the case of chazoka. Zuhi Shesorfen olel esatruma. This chazaka, namely the cheskas metapchin, is in which the chachomim say where metame means completely tame, even to burn it. Notice how we mentioned that Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are consistent. Well, above, use your arrows that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see here that Reish Lakish is saying Zuhi Shesorfen Olel, and above we had Reish Lakish saying Sorfen Al Hachazokis. And Sorfen Al Hachazokis is a reference to the cheskas metapchin, the assumed behavior pattern of children to be metapchin, and the result of that is that we'll burn the truma. We continue. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Ein zu chazoka shesorfen oleo truma. He says, this is not a chazoka based on which we could end up burning truma. And therefore, what Rabbi Yochanan said above, that the and that which, let me explain again, that which we say the Rabbonan are metamin, yes, the Rabbonan are metamin in the Tanaic source, but that means litlos, not to burn, but rather to set aside, not use it, after all, to suffake, that there's a suffake that it is, that it's defiled. Well, once Rabbi Yochanan says, Ein zu chazoka shesorfen oleo truma, this is not the case of chazoka that warrants the burning of truma, implying that there is another case of chazoka where we would burn truma. Elo, eizo, chazoka, Rabbi Yochanan, shesorfen oleo truma. Where would you have a case of a chazoka which would justify the burning of truma? Kedisnan, in the following. Esau besoch habayis, there's dough in your house. Ushrotzim utzvardim metaplim sham. And you have shrotzim, dead shrotzim, these dead creatures that are classified as shrotzim, are a source of tuma. They're an ava tuma, primary level tuma. Tzvardim, it's another type of creature, often translated as frogs. When they're dead, they're not metame. And the term metaplim sham, Rashi says, oisim nipoilin nipoilin chatichos chatichos. There are pieces and pieces of these shrotzim and tzvardim. V'nimtzu, the Gemara continues, v'nimtzu chatichos be'isa. And pieces of these organisms are found in the dough. Imroiv shrotzim, if the majority of creatures in the house were shrotzim, Rashi's expression is very important here. Rashi says four lines under the Gemara, Imroiv shrotzim, imabayas muchzekes. Notice we dashed underline that. That's a key word. If the bias has the assumed status, the shrotzim mitzim shom yosim mitzvardim, there are more shrotzim, which are sources of tuma, than svardim, tome, af lisoreif. In a case like this, the dough, if it's a truma dough, would be tome, would be considered tome, even to burn it. De chazoka veruba diisei kamonhu. You've got an assumed status and a majority that is in front of us. By evaluating what you see in front of you, the numbers of shrotzim versus the numbers of tzvardim, you will discover that there is a rove of shrotzim. That's called a ruba di'isei kamon, that is present in front of us. So when you have something like that, you can burn the dough. Rashi goes on, aval hahu, the tinok, with regard to children and their becoming tomei, all you had in front of you was one child. Do we ascribe that child to the class of kids that are metapeach in garbage heaps? That is a function of a majority, but it's not in front of you. It's the majority of children of the world, of the wide world. That's called ruba delese kamonhu. It's a rove, but it's not a rove that's measurable in front of us. And hence, it's not strong enough, it's not a strong enough majority to establish a status that would warrant burning. So we go back to the Gemara, which said, Imrov shrotzim tamea, and we're adding tamea even to burn. Imrov tzvardim tahora. And if the majority of creatures in that house were tzvardim, then the dough is declared to be tahor, because dead svardim are not a source of defilement. Tanyo Kavosei de Rabbi Yochanan. We have a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Yochanan that the term mitamin we saw above by in the case of the Rabbanan was litlos, and we explained that the litlos scenario will be in the case of a ruba, the lesse kamon, like we saw in the case of the tinok. So where do we see a Tanaic support for Rabbi Yochanan? The source says shnei dvorim ein bohem das lishol vasom chachomim kemo shiyesh bohem das lishol. There are two things, two examples that don't have the capacity of answering questions. This is a standard in the realm of Tumah based on the Parsha of Sota in the Torah. The Parsha of Sota is the Parsha where a woman who's married is suspected of being immoral and having intimacy with another man. When she falls under suspicion, she's called a Sota. And there's a procedure of bringing her to the Beis HaMikdash where she drinks special water. And if she's guilty, she will die. And if not, so she will leave as an innocent woman. There's an entire tractate dedicated to the topic. Therefore, no need for us to get into the details. But the topic of Sota is described in the Torah by words amongst which you find the word Tumah. What characterizes the doubt that arises with regard to the Sota? Well, one major factor is that it involves a human being, the woman, concerning whom we have a doubt whether she was immoral or not. The fact that we have the Torah describing her using the words Tumah and not Tumah, and the woman being present, we therefore say that if you have a case of defilement that parallels the case of the Sota, that's similar in the case as the case of the Sota, what is the case of the Sota involving a woman, someone, a human being that you can ask questions and get answers from, so too any topic of Tumah where yesh bo das lishol, it involves, let us say, a person, or something held by a person, where you could ask questions and get answers, and a doubt arises. So we will say, safek tumah mitome. If you have a doubt, it will be declared tome. If the safek involves something that's inanimate, that you can't ask questions and get and expect answers. So, sofek tumah under circumstances like that, she'en b'em das lishol, we will declare tohor. Here, we have two exceptions, two things where they don't have das lishol, and the chachomim treat them as if there is that attribute of yesh b'em das lishol. And what are the two examples? And of course, and when a doubt arises in a private domain, like the case of Sota, which is in a private domain, the doubt concerning the woman's morality arises when she goes into private with someone. That's called a Rishus HaYochid, a private domain. So there are two areas that, even though they don't parallel the Sota in the sense that they don't have Das Lishol, the Chachamim nevertheless ruled that the Safek Tumah will be Tomei in a Rishus HaYochid. What are the two examples? Tinok v'odacheres. The case of Tinok, the toddler, and another case. What Tinok called Amoron? Well, we already explained the case of the Tinok above. The Tinok and the handling of garbage heaps with shrotzim and nevelis in them, and his subsequent handling of the dough. V'oid acheres mahi, what's the other case? Esau besoch habayis, v'tarnagolim umashkim tmeim shom. Dough is in a house, and there are chickens, and there are beverages that are tomei, mashkim tmeim, liquids that are tomei. V'nimtzu, the Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. Nikurim, Nikurim, Be'isa. And there are pecking marks, holes formed by the chickens in the dough. Toilin, we suspend it. In other words, we lo ochlin velo sarfin. We won't eat it, but we won't burn it. So here we have a second case of things that ein bohem das lishol, chickens, then the dough, and then the mashkim, and nevertheless, we're not going to say safek tohar. Where, as we said, toilin, it's put into suspense. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, lo shanu, elo b'mashkim levonim. Lo shanu means that which we said, that toilin is only if you have, if the mashkim temeim there were levonim, were white in color, same color as the dough. Avo b'mashkim adumim, if the tomei mashkim that were there was red, Himisa de Nokir, if it were so that the peckings of the chickens with the mashkim involved the red mashkim, the red liquids, then made the idea it would have been noticeable. And therefore, if you don't see any red marks in the dough is tahar. Ah, Vedilma Barasinu Isa. But maybe the liquids were really absorbed into the dough, and that's why you don't notice it. Even if they were red liquids, you know, and that's why you don't notice it, and therefore you should still be toilet. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Dovar Zeh Shomar Baribi. This is a matter that the great man, Baribi means the Godel Hador, it's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he heard Upirusho Lo Shoma, but the definition, the explanation, he apparently didn't hear. Namely, what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to say is that even with regard to the red mashkim, the red liquids, there is still further distinctions that could be made within the realm of the red. And it's as follows: Lo shanu, elo b'mashkim tzlulim shebabua shiltina knikur bo. The teaching above regarding toilin, that the dough is in a state of sofek tumah, that's if the mashkim were tzlulim, very clear, or they were transparent. They might have been red, but they were transparent, creating a reflection that's babur shiltinuk nikubim, the reflection of a child would be recognizable in them. So mashkim like that are very easily absorbed into the dough. So that even if they were red, it wouldn't be noticeable, and therefore you'd be toilin. Avo mashkim akurim lo. But if it was a murky type of red liquid, that is not so easily absorbed into the dough. And if the dough doesn't have any red stain marks, you can declare it tahor. Now, the main point of this discussion was before, when we said we have a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Yochanan, that the Tuma stated above, in the case of the tinok by the dough, and the result of the rabbonans, the chachamim saying tomei meant litlos, that you see in the source that we saw at the bottom of Omid Aleph, where there were two things that the chachamim declared, even though ein bohem das lishol. We view them as das lishol. Two things. One of them was tinok, and then there was the od acheres. What is the way we deal with the case of tinok, which was the case of the dough above? Well, in order to discover how you deal with that, you have to look into the description of the od acheres scenario. And the Oda Chera scenario said explicitly, Toilin. That's what you noticed on the top line here on Pei Amid Beis. So just like with regard to the Od Acheres case, we said Toilin. Similarly, with regard to the Tinok case, which is taught together with the Od Acheres case, there too we will apply Toilin. And that was Rabbi Yochanan's explanation above with regard to the case of the Tinok and the dough. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.